Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
It's Tuesday, September 6th, and that means it's back to school day for Uvalde survivors. We start here. For the first time since a devastating mass shooting, a city gets ready to drop off its children.
It saw the first that we're having to do without her.
They won't be stepping foot in Robb Elementary School, so how is this about to work? We'll talk to the team who's been on the ground for months. There's a counteroffensive in Ukraine. Actually, there might be more than one.
And when you tell me this war will end one day, you will be here?
Of course.
David Muir just sat down with Vladimir Zelensky. We'll take you to Kyiv. And they've got water boys hauling bottles, but how do you play football with no ice or showers?
You have no water. You're getting flushed to darn toilet. You have no air.
What a college football opener tells us about the water crisis in Jackson, Mississippi. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. The last day of school in Uvalde, Texas, was supposed to be on a Thursday, May 26th, earlier this year. 2 days before that, a man scaled a fence at Robb Elementary School carrying an AR-15 and walked through an unlocked door.
It all happened too fast. Training, no training, all kinds of training. Nothing sets you ready, gets you ready for this.
In the minutes that ticked by, he shot dozens of children. 19 third and fourth graders were killed. So were two teachers. And in the days, weeks, even months afterwards, these families had to deal with something that has not always been as present in other school shootings.
He is in a room full of victims, full of victims at this point.
There were children in that classroom that were at risk, and it was, in fact, still an active shooter situation.
A police force that could not or would not, depending on who you listen to, be clear about what had happened and why the shooter was allowed to remain in a classroom for over an hour before being brought down. Well, today, for the first time since the survivors were hustled out of those doors, public schools are about to be open again in Uvalde, Texas. And this is where ABC News has been covering this story a little differently. As part of an initiative we call Uvalde 365, ABC News has had reporters essentially living there in Uvalde, Texas. They've been embedded for months. And we got two of these reporters with us this morning. ABC's Jenny Wagnon-Kortz and Ismael Estrada are in what have become their offices, essentially, their hotel rooms in Uvalde right now. And guys, just after however many weeks you've been there, can you first of all just help me understand what it has been like since this shooting?
I think that there's still a level of shock, honestly, in this town. I think we're 3 months post event, and they're still trying to find their way.
It's spelled E-L-I-A-H-N-A, and everybody kept adding the extra A in there, and I'm like, oh my God.
I think most importantly, they don't want their children's name to be forgotten.
Liana was a loving, caring, nurturing little girl. Like, she was full of life.
They want their names to be front and center. And I think they realized that early on that they had to be their child advocate.
Everybody knew her as the softball player because that's the picture that they used whenever we couldn't find her or anything. So I wanted to keep her alive like that. Like that's who they knew her as. And
the murals, these beautiful murals are going up all over the city. And the families will come out and watch as their child's mural is being painted. And they'll start them usually in the evening, and they'll take a projector and they'll project them onto the wall and kind of sketch out part of it. And the families will stand there in the dark, you know, just almost all night watching them start this process. And they're crying, they're laughing.
Happy time because, you know, I'm going to be able to come and see her. And then it's like sad because look at all that, you know, everything everybody's doing, it's like, it's amazing, it's a blessing, but for the reason they're doing it, you know, like, because, you know, of our kids, you know, we no longer have them. And
so that's been a really healing, it's an incredible healing process that we've been able to witness in this town.
And Ismael, I mean, you basically got to Uvalde on the day of the shooting and essentially never left, right? What has it been like for you to watch this play out?
Yeah, it was unlike any other shooting I've covered before. Unfortunately, we cover these shootings far too often. So that something was very different about this town. At first, it was an immediate outcry because there was a sense that they weren't getting the exact truth from the police. And in the days and weeks ahead, we started to see from the families a need for accountability.
You guys don't care squat about these families.
It's city council. It is school board hearings.
You are not going to sweep this under the rug.
So they are calling for accountability. And at times they're calling out people by name saying, you know who I am. You know what I do. You know who these people are. And why are you so silent? It's amazing when you see it, just how much tension there is in these meetings.
You messed up. And you don't have the audacity to say we messed up and Arriondo's gone. Out of here.
And on the flip side of that, this is a heavy law enforcement community. DPS has been here. Border Patrol is here. County Sheriff are here. Uvalde Police. I mean, you can't go anywhere without seeing law enforcement in this town, everywhere. And, you know, I've been in the grocery store. And somebody walks up to a man and starts yelling at him in the grocery store saying, you know, you're a cop. You need to quit. Turn in your badge. Wow. You shouldn't be a part of this police department. And this is just, you know, this is a man that's going to go for groceries. And so we've been
like feelings are just that raw, even in unsuspecting moments.
Feelings are absolutely raw. And so I think that there's just a long way to go in the community.
As you're there on the ground, have you guys gotten a sense of, I guess, just how families have been dealing with the grief when all the cameras aren't around?
I'm getting to know the Casares family very well. Javier and his wife, Gloria. They have a daughter, Jasmine, who's going to be a senior in high school. They lost their daughter, Jackie, in the classroom. She was just, I think, 2 weeks away from her 10th birthday.
I have to keep being her voice. It's like, I have to. We made her a promise, and we promise. I promise that I will fight for her the rest of my life.
And now they have, there's 21 of them who are becoming a family of their own. And what I'm witnessing is that when they're together, they're able to let their guard down a little bit. They're able to enjoy each other because they've all been through something and they can actually feel like they can take a breath.
It is a comfort. It's a comfort knowing that I'm not the only one that feels the way I feel. You know, it's a comfort knowing that I'm not the only one that is fighting for our children.
I'm working closely with the Rendon family. Justin is the captain of the football team who's wearing the number 21 jersey this season.
It made it a little bit more special that, you know, he was selected to be number 21 to represent the lives that were lost on May 24, 2022.
21 is now a very special number in this community. You see it everywhere. You see it in storefronts. You see it on car bumper stickers on, you know, the sleeves of shirts. Like 21 is just, it's a forever a sacred number here.
Boom, extra point, let's go, let's go, let's go!
You know, on Friday night, this past Friday night, we had the first home football game.
9 at the 20, right here. Steve Ash, you're up.
For the past 3 months, this whole city has been caught in anger, frustration, anxiety. They didn't know how to smile. All of that was kind of getting stripped away. And people were back to just normal life.
I want you to think about all we've been through. And I'm talking about everything. I'm talking about from a coaching change to the pandemic to the tragedy. Everything we did is pointing to right now.
It was a sold out crowd of 5,000 people. This town hasn't seen that in years. And there was a lot of excitement. There were some families that were planning on coming, and then they were having anxiety about it once Friday rolled around. It was just the thought of, you know, interacting with big groups of people, especially when it's a really celebratory moment.
Oh, so some of the parents just decided not to go then. Just it felt too intense.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we're seeing is a town moving on, and the families are kind of, they're not able to. It was a very, you know, exciting game. There was a lot of cheering. There was a lot of high-fiving and joy. And the families just aren't ready to experience that yet. They're not ready for the hugs. They're not ready for the pats on the back. They're not ready for the sympathy. And it's very understandable because this town is moving forward, but they're kind of left behind.
Have these families been thinking about specifically the first day of school? Is that a thing that comes up that seems like, whether it's scary or whether it's inspiring, does that, is that loomed large as a moment here?
Yes, definitely. With the Casares family, Jasmine is going to school today.
Right.
Can you get back to normal?
I don't think you ever really can. You can get close, but I don't think anything's ever going to go back to normal.
She has been thrust into activism. She hasn't had her normal summer. And now suddenly she's faced with the reality of life getting back to somewhat normal. And for Gloria, the mom, she's now having to deal with it. One of the big firsts that she talks about, which is, this will be the first time she's not sending Jackie to school.
It's all the firsts that we're having to do without her. The first day back to school pictures, those were one of her favorite traditions.
For Javier, Jackie was his angel. You know, she was his everything. And just for him to not get up and see her in the home and getting ready for school is very, very powerful for him.
She had that energy, that spark, and that spark was taken away from us.
And they're all struggling very much with this first day of school.
Wow. And so then I guess I'm wondering, what is today going to look like? Like, where are they even going to physically be? Like, they're not going back to Robb Elementary, are they?
No, they've opened up a educational center. It's called the Benson Complex. They're opening that up and having the kids are going there. So there's a lot of new things happening today in this community. Mm. To be honest with you, we don't know how many kids are going back to school today. They've been given an option to do virtual schooling. We have had a good number of students here have gone to some of the private schools here in Uvalde, and they started August 15th. So some of those kids have been in school for a couple of weeks now. And then there are families who are staying within the county, but going to different towns in the area that have moved, they've transferred their kids. So we actually don't know how many kids are going in person today for school. And that, you know, school officials are going to give that to us after the fact, obviously. But I'm not sure that they even know yet how many are going to show up. One of the things that every day, I don't know why it surprises me, because it shouldn't at this point, just how connected everybody is to each other in this community. You know what I mean? Like, everywhere, every conversation you're having, they're connected to another person that you were having a conversation with maybe a week ago. And it's just really, it just goes to show, like, you know, every inch of this town is affected. Every person, every aspect of this town is affected by this. And I don't know how you come through that without being forever changed.
All right. Ismael Estrada, Jenny Wagner-Courts, they're in Uvalde like they've been for the last several months. I know you'll be watching everything today. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up on Start Here, he's overseeing at least one counteroffensive, a potential nuclear disaster, and Vladimir Putin wants him dead. The Ukrainian president speaks to David Muir after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at caskers.com.
It was about a week ago that Ukraine announced it was launching an ambitious new counteroffensive to take back the country's land in the south that had been seized by Russia.
It looks like they're moving to push the Russians back over the Dnipro River and essentially take back the biggest city that Russia has taken in this whole conflict.
Well, then, over this past Labor Day weekend, I got a call telling me that ABC's chief anchor David Muir had made his way into Kyiv for an exclusive sit-down interview with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. So, where does this counteroffensive stand, and what does Zelensky have up his sleeve? David Muir is in Kyiv right now after wrapping this interview. David, can you just tell me about how this came together and what it's like there in the capital?
Well, listen, we had a request in to get access to the president to interview him. Obviously, critical point in this war, the world and certainly Ukraine marking 6 months of war just in recent days. The central question is there an end game in sight? What does the end of this war, this invasion look like? Is this going to be a war that grinds on for months, years, dare I say? All of those are major questions. And then there are the developments right here on the ground, obviously. There have been ongoing nuclear worries about the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Just while we were here on the ground, new concerns, the backup power line into that plant, which, by the way, as you know, is the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. The backup power line, that's the main power line now. That was shut down because of shelling in the region. The Russians are in control of that plant.
We stand here in the office of the president.
Yes.
An entertainer who has become a wartime president. And when you tell me this war will end one day, you will be here?
Of course. Of course. Till the end of the war, I have to be here.
And so when we sat down with President Zelensky after they agreed to do this interview, we traveled to Kyiv, and we did it at the presidential office building, a highly fortified, you know, presidential office at this point, the armed guards, multiple checkpoints. And once we went inside, there was a guard in the hallway at every doorway, at every turn. I mean, it is clearly a place where they're trying to keep their president alive, knowing that he remains a target. But we got right to the news with him. We asked him about the nuclear power plant.
It means the biggest danger in the Europe. So they occupied it. So that is, means that they use nuclear weapon.
He made news essentially saying what they have done is turn Zaporizhia into a nuclear weapon. There are pushes to demilitarize the zone. That's what President Zelensky would like, the Russians to be pushed back. President Biden, the Pentagon, saying there should be a controlled shutdown of the plant. But President Zelensky here told me flat out that that would be unjust.
I know that the Russians would like the reactors to be disconnected from Ukrainian grid and connected to the Russian grid. No, we do not agree to those messages.
Because that plant still in the middle of this war powers parts of this country.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that Zelensky actually switched to English for a little bit of that, talking about the power plant, clearly because that is so important to him to get out to a world audience right now. When it comes to the counteroffensive, obviously one of the questions is, how is it progressing? But he kind of hinted to you that it's not just the south. It's not just this one counteroffensive on the city of Kherson, the first city to fall. This could be spreading wider than that. Like, how many counteroffensives are we talking about here?
Well, listen, he was extraordinarily careful, and that wasn't a surprise to me sitting down with him to get into the details of the operation.
I think that information silence is important. So I want the enemy gets some surprises from us.
Though what he was clear about was that it's not only in the south, in that key city, obviously very strategic because of the ports, which are now in control of the Russians, and as you mentioned, the first city taken by the Russians, but that this counteroffensive is also taking part in the east and in Kharkiv, which is the second largest city in Ukraine, which is still under Ukrainian control, but significant Russian shelling throughout that region. He wouldn't clearly say that the counteroffensive aims to secure that city as well, but it's our understanding that this counteroffensive is in the east and in the south. And look, I think it's very clear to them that they have to try to push back the Russians in as many places and particularly key strategic regions of this country as much as they can before there is some sort of endgame here.
He doesn't care. He doesn't give a damn about how many Russians will lose their lives. We are so different. We will not find anything, any compromises.
But I will tell you, when I ask, will there be any compromise, any talks with the Russians, President Zelensky at this point saying, we are not going to talk to the terrorists. This is his new message, not only to Russia, but the world, when it comes to Vladimir Putin. After the atrocities in Bucha and elsewhere in this country, he has asked President Biden to name Russia a state sponsor of terrorism. He revealed he's had that conversation with President Biden.
We want this to happen. I understand that it's not easy.
He is taking a tough stance on any kind of endgame, any kind of compromise, at least at this point, saying it's out of the question. This is not conventional war he's dealing with Putin, he said. This is terror.
Well, you just kind of mentioned that they feel the need to get a lot done now. Why? Why is it so important to spread your army this thin to go after so many targets right now all at once?
Well, I think one of the key triggers, if you will, for this counteroffensive is just the timing. I mean, we're heading into the fall, into the winter. You're looking at energy prices throughout the West, throughout Europe. They are obviously supporters of Ukraine at this point, along with the U.S. Certainly NATO countries, we have talked about this often, Brad, have come together in a way that they have not in many, many years on this. But when you have people paying higher prices for everything, but in particular energy with the winter months coming and Russia saying it will not open a, you know, a key gas pipeline going into Germany, saying that just in recent days, President Zelensky telling me that Russia knows exactly what it's doing.
They basically put the whole Europe on an energy gas needle.
It's weaponizing energy. It's weaponizing natural gas. And he flat out said to me, if Russia is successful...
Oh, like that support becomes more strained as the winter goes on.
And if he can turn the Europeans who are paying higher gas prices, higher energy prices for home heating in the coming months, if Putin can rattle them, given his control over the energy supply, Zelensky fears that could turn the tide in this as far as support's concerned.
All right, David Muir there in Kyiv. Thank you so much.
Brad, thank you. Always great to join you.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, after water shortages and floods, Jackson, Mississippi needed a lifeline. They got it. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. It was clear this weekend how much a simple football game could lift up the spirits of a single, struggling community. After all, it wasn't just the Friday Night Lights of Texas. How about what happened in Jackson, Mississippi?
Touchdown! Gets Jackson State on the board first!
Just like the rest of the state capital, students at Jackson State University have had life completely upended because of extensive damage to their water system. Even before floods had interfered in citywide water treatment, dorm move-in day was postponed because of water boil advisories. And on Saturday, their football team was scheduled to play in its first game of the season, at home.
Everybody in here is going through something, but you still had to do what you have to do.
The head coach of Jackson State is none other than NFL legend Deion Sanders, and the man they call Primetime described the day the water went off in Jackson.
The campus is shut down. How can we go out there and dominate like that and take a child back to something that's shut down and you have no water? You can't even flush the darn toilet. You have no air. You have to think about all that.
He said drinking water was actually the least of their problems. Tens of thousands of bottles had been trucked in from out of state, but... what about ice? What about toilets? Suddenly, he said, he wasn't worried about practice reps. He had players who couldn't get a shower at home or a safe meal. So the team moved into nearby hotels, costing about $15,000 a night. Uniforms were trucked away to laundromats outside the city that still have water pressure. Portable toilets were brought in. Sanders openly said they were in crisis mode, raising the question, if it's this bad for the football team, how about regular students? Some were looking forward to their first year of college in person until last week the school once once again went all virtual.
Sanders has a man in the corner, and it's a touchdown.
But on Saturday night, with the remaining student body on hand and with a tired city watching, Jackson State won its first game 59-3.
Jackson State coming up with it on the return.
It seemed like players were making a pact with their neighbors, saying, if you're not done fighting, neither are we. If you did not get a chance to listen to the show yesterday, which, Labor Day, I get it, but I highly recommend you go back and listen to our deep dive on long COVID and how it's affecting American workplaces. Some reporting there you're not going to find anywhere else. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.